I moved to New York City in 1999 to chase my dream of becoming a writer. I was 27 and broke and in love with the paradox of New York's grit and polish and its chronic opportunities to reinvent yourself. I probably would have been leaving my apartment in Brooklyn, late as usual, for the coffee shop and my F-train commute when the first tower was hit at 8:46 a.m. Instead, I was woken up at 5 a.m. I was on vacation and visiting my best friend on Maui. Her husband had gotten a call from his brother in California with the news a little earlier. He said he waited to wake me so that I could sleep in a little longer, but I suspect that really he needed some time to figure out how to tell me that New York was on fire. It was already 11 a.m. on the East Coast, and by then it was clear that this was a terrorist attack. I was desperate for information. My first call was to my parents, who were traveling that day. They were safe, but stuck in Reno. I spent the next several hours dialing and redialing my closest friends and coworkers. Cell phone service in New York had instantly become almost non-existent, and getting through to anybody was virtually impossible. That didn't stop me from trying and trying and trying again, though. I was intent to ensure they were alive and safe. Some had already changed their voicemail messages with the most precious words you could hear that day. I'm okay. I raced to the library as soon as it opened for a faster internet connection. I read the news and sent emails till my fingers were too tired to type. As I worked furiously to track down the people I loved, my mind and body were fraught with such tension that it felt like every muscle, tendon, and nerve would snap. Hearing or reading, "I'm okay," provided a rush of relief, the kind where you suddenly realize you'd been holding your breath for way too long. Of course, none of us was really okay, but in the moment, it was enough. Through a network of friends and family, I managed to account for everyone I cared for, except for one girlfriend whom no one had heard from. Was there anything I could have done if I was back in Brooklyn? Probably not. Still, I felt helpless and useless being so far away. I might as well have been on Mars. To take my mind off things, I eventually went surfing. It was the best way I could find to fend off the despair. I learned the next day that my friend was all right. Like so many others, she'd made it out of Manhattan by crossing a bridge on foot. As for me, it was a week before I was able to get on a plane to go back home. There are worse places to be stuck than Maui, I know. But all I wanted to do was get back to New York. I didn't know what I could do or how I could help or even if it was safe to return, but I needed to lay eyes on the city myself. After that, New York itself was transformed, not just physically, but psychologically too. Bomb scares would shut down subway lines regularly. Soldiers stood on street corners with automatic rifles slung over their shoulders. War felt imminent and politics got scarier. Moving through the city felt dangerous. It was stressful. I broke out in a rash. It's remarkable that no one I knew died that day, but that doesn't mean I'm not still grieving. 20 years later, I still observe September 11th as a very solemn day, and often find myself surprised when people carry on with life as usual on its anniversary. I carry on too, because, well, I'm okay. I just know now that those two simple words can express a magnitude of different things depending on the day.